You're listening to the Wave Express podcast, delivering everything you need to know to stay safe and profitable out on the road.
Okay, everybody, we are here this morning with Jeremy McLeese, an accomplished contractor for Wave Express. And thank you for joining the Wave Express podcast. We'll just get things rolling. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning.
Welcome to the office this morning.
Thank you.
This is not your normal stomping ground. You're usually out there making miles out on the highways and byways of our great country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, living on the road.
Yes, sir. Jeremy, how long have you been in the business?
Since around the last of October, 1st of November, 2013.
2013. Mm-hmm. And at that time, you were with CWRV, right?
Yeah.
And then you joined Wave in 2019?
Yeah.
Okay. And I know you and I had talked in a general way about this, but not trying to get too scientific, about how many miles would you say you have logged doing this work since 2013?
I'd say probably close to two. Maybe 1.8, something like that.
Million?
Yeah.
Total miles on the road doing this.
Yeah.
Is that loaded and empty?
Yeah.
Just miles?
Yeah,
just, hey, miles or miles. So I'm not trying to pick it apart or anything. But okay. The reason I'm drilling down on that is because I think it's safe to call you the voice of experience.
One of many.
Yeah. Well, there's some we want to hear and others maybe not. That is awesome, man. That's a lot of experience, and we want to tap into some of that during this session. Just to help our listeners dial in, what kind of equipment were you running during those years, Jeremy?
I started out with a 2012 Ram 3500 dually, and I've got a right now I'm using a 2019 Ram 3500 dually.
Okay, so that's a very popular choice with people who were doing this. On that 2012, how many miles did you rack up on that?
That one is vehicle? About 1.5 million.
1.5 million
yeah.
On the same truck,
mm-hmm.
On a light-duty one-ton truck.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody hits the seven-figure threshold when they're running light-duty diesel equipment. Jeremy, how do you do that?
PMs and prayer.
PMs and prayer. I like that. Daily?
Yep.
Multiple times a day?
Yep.
Man, 1.5 million, I don't think it's going to be hard for anybody to believe that divine intervention was involved.
Yep. Especially with original injectors and one alternator, and that's it.
My goodness, that is impressive. That is impressive. You could be a commercial for Cummins.
I wish they would.
Hey, yeah, probably pay something good. Well, okay. So, I want to drill down a little bit on your experience. So, 1.5 million miles, even though I know it's a tough truck and everything, that is impressive, mm-hmm. right? Because those trucks were not intended to last that long.
Yeah.
But we go over the road. We are not super heavy compared to some. Well, some of our loads are, but most of the time we're reasonable in terms of what kind of freight we're hauling. You said PMs and prayer. Now, the prayer part, I understand, and that's kind of an individual preference type thing.
Yeah.
But the PMs, what can an owner-operator of a Dodge Cummins one-ton dually truck do proactively to hit a threshold like that?
I use a diesel fuel additive religiously. I always change my oil about every 2.5 weeks, change the fuel filter with the oil no matter what the cost is. It's nothing compared to a $26,000 motor. Change the oil in the differentials twice a year. I always done oil analysis twice a year, transmission fluid twice a year. You got to keep that stuff changed. Every weekend when I'm home, I'm underneath the truck with a hammer trying to find stuff loose, trying to see if I've got bolts missing, you know, just constantly getting in it.
What is the diesel additive that you've been using?
Howes.
Called Howes?
Howes diesel fuel.
You pick that up most truck stops?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's cheaper at Walmart. It's about half the cost at Walmart for the same size bottle.
Well, that's good advice right there.
Yeah.
And you hit every fill up?
Pretty much, I'll put some in it every fill up. I use it in the summertime. It's not just an anti-gel; it's also lubricant.
You know, I've talked to several diesel techs in the last few years who have told me that diesel is becoming less and less of a lubricant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be a little oilier, and now it is less so. I guess the refinement is, I don't know if you call that an improvement or what, but there's just less lubricity in the diesel fuel.
Yeah.
And so the additive, you know, a lot of the manufacturers say, oh, we don't recommend an additive. Well, they don't want to stick their neck out in case somebody dumps half a barrel into and screws their truck up. But used judiciously, that additive has clearly done good work for you.
Yeah.
I mean, 1.5 million, man, that just speaks for itself. So cool. So there's Hal's that you're using. Mm-hmm. I know there's Lucas. They have a pretty good product out there. Again, I think you can get that at Walmart too.
Yeah.
Or some places that might be a little less expensive than a truck stop. I suppose it's always nice to have that as an option, even though it's high retail. If you run out or something out on the road, like you said, it's cheaper than a $26,000 motor.
Yeah.
And so you just keep that in the tank almost all the time.
Yep.
Good deal. Jeremy, and you said you do a lot of this yourself.
Mm-hmm. Everything I can possibly do, I do myself.
How much does that save you, do you think?
Well, I was letting a guy work on my truck so I can spend more time at home, and then I quit letting him work on it, and I went and bought a brand new one and was able to pay for it and put money in the bank.
I wasn't really expecting a specific number out of you. What I was expecting is something like, it saves me a whole heck of a lot, because that we, around here we refer to that as wholesale maintenance. Maintenance you can do without having to go somewhere, pay retail, a dealership or a branded garage or something like that, where you'll get decent service, but you were for darn sure pay for it.
Yeah.
So one of the things I love about what you're telling me is you have learned to do quite a bit yourself, and you do it yourself.
Yeah.
Now, there's something I know that our listener probably doesn't know, and that is that you were trained as a diesel technician.
Yeah.
Now, not all of us are, right? So I'm not, but I've learned to do a bunch of things myself too, again, in the spirit of wholesale maintenance. What do you recommend somebody who's not a diesel technician, what all should they try to do themselves?
Don't be afraid to try it. If it's tore up, you can't tear it up. Don't be afraid to try it. Look it up on YouTube. Somebody's done it. Somebody's videotaped it. The first time you ever work on something, it's intimidating. But don't be afraid to tear into it.
You know, there's an area where I'm surprised most people who are not trained technicians don't become more proficient, and that is in tire repair. Mm-hmm. And most of us aren't born tire repairmen, right? So that it the way I look at that is, look, go to your local tire shop, ask to spend a little time or have a guy even, you know, take some time out and get you trained up on what it takes. And I'm thinking more the trailer tires now than the Amtrak, because a lot of guys end up roadside with a blown trailer tire or something like that. Sometimes it is just a screw or a hole that can be patched right there and then.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys just don't have the preparedness to do it. The cost of that preparedness is minuscule. We're talking like a $10 tire patch kit, right? Mm-hmm. But if you don't know how to do it, and you're stressed out and scared, and you know you're falling apart on the side of the road there, that's not something you're going to try to do. But if you get yourself prepped in advance, both in terms of the kit that you need, and then having done it a few times before you're in that live environment crisis, you got a leg up that other guys don't have.
Yeah, you got to be able to read up on that and do it, because it's a safety issue out on the side of the road. I mean, if you ain't got no plug kit, which in some situations, some states, that's illegal, but you got to do what you do to get off the edge of the road. If you've just got a screw in the tire and you're not safe, always carry a can of Fix-A-Flat. That tire's already ruined. It's going to have to be replaced. Just get off the road where you're safe, and then you can fix it.
Bottom line is, one way or the other, be your own hero in that situation.
Yeah.
Even if you have to limp it someplace, like you say, to I mean, to me, I understand legality is important. We're all about compliance.
Yeah.
But I'm about saving lives, too.
Yep.
So you are in a life-threatening situation when you're roadside, especially on a high-speed highway. Getting off of that and into a proper safe haven repair facility is priority one.
Yep. Do whatever you can to get off the road safely.
For sure. Jeremy, your truck is a little bit unique in the sense that it has a Wave Express wrap all over it. You're kind of a moving billboard.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been advantageous to you at all?
Well, I've had guys scan it, but I don't know whether or not they're pulling or not, but I've had a lot of conversations over it. It's gotten a lot of attention.
So the way that works is, anybody who you refer by way of scanning that QR code on your wrap, or just in conversation with you, who says, hey, Jeremy referred me, there's going to be a little bit of something coming back to you for that. It's not going to make you rich, but you'll know you've done something after a while, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you rolling down the road with that wrap on your truck, when you go into a scale, does that make any difference?
I think it does.
How so?
Well, just because they see that you've got that on your truck, and your truck looks good anyways, because you're not going to put it on just anything. It DOT can pull you around back, whether it's, if it's dirty, you know, if you've got rust spots all over it, if your truck just looks bad, then chances are so do your paperwork.
So what I hear you saying is you show up loud and proud, you might not be the hottest target that day.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You know, when we've encouraged people to get those wraps, it really was more for the referral of drivers, right? Mm-hmm. And having that eye-catching banner on your truck. But an unintended gain, if you will, from having that is you show up at the scale and they're like, okay, this guy's no joke. He's, mm-hmm. he's, you know, preaching to everyone that he's a professional transporter and he has probably got his stuff in order.
Yeah.
And I know that they're not there just to, you know, have fun and play games. They want to drill down on the target they think is going to yield some enforcement.
Yeah.
And that's probably not you.
Well, a lot of guys wants to pull their size and they think they're smarter than DOT, but they're not. So, you know, we got that wrap on the truck. They know that we're going to do what we're supposed to be doing because we're easier spotted.
Yeah, because you're never not repping the brand, so yeah. to speak. Now, I know you've been through multiple roadside inspections, scale house inspections, et cetera. How have those gone for you?
Good. Gone good.
What? Not everybody can say that, Jeremy. What is it that is causing you to succeed in those situations?
Your attitude. Be nice to them. If you go in there with a hateful attitude, chances are you're going to get reamed. Just be nice to the driver. Be nice to the officer. You know, be respectful. And make sure you've got your paperwork in order.
Come correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then act correct.
Yep.
You know, one of the things that I share with drivers about law enforcement personnel is, you know, you're hauling freight and you show up and you look, the last thing you want to do that day is have somebody inspect you, mm-hmm. right? A cop.
Yeah.
But here you are, you're in that situation. And my counsel to drivers who are in that situation is, look, yes, today they're inspecting you. Yesterday, they may have been involved in a cleanup of a fatal accident, and yeah. they may have seen things you and I don't ever want to see. And so this, you know, they deal with that. They deal with life and death, and then they deal with mundane things like inspections and show mm-hmm. them the respect that they're due. And when you do that, as you've advised us to, you tend to get something like that back.
You do. Mm-hmm.
Now, you've never had a bad inspection, right?
No.
And I mean, so in listening to you describe that, I think, okay, you can't just get by on attitude alone. I mean, so you've clearly shown up with a correct attitude, but I'm pretty sure your stuff was prepared when you entered that scale.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't, you know, if you try to cheat something, you're going to get caught.
And they have ways of determining who they want to inspect that you and I probably don't even think of.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a couple insights?
Well, for one, your truck. And for two, if you go into the scale house and, you know, you're taking a sip of pop or whatever, you know, just pay attention to what you're doing. Roll your window down. They're looking inside your vehicle. There's cameras everywhere that they can see inside your vehicle. They know what you're doing. If you're fumbling around trying to hide something, if you come in too hot, you know, each scale has got its own mile per hour. I had a buddy of mine one time that got the bypass, but he went too fast and they pulled him around back and inspected him. You got to pay attention.
It's not funny. I'm laughing because he thought he had it made.
He thought he had it made.
And then he put himself in a frying pan.
He did. He got inspected.
Ouch.
And he used to work for CWRV.
Oh, boy. So that's good advice. Come correct. Come at the right speed. Don't pick your nose. Don't mm-hmm. slurp your Slurpee or chew on your cheeseburger. Come through that scale like you're a man with a job to do or a woman, and you'll be treated that way.
Yeah. Don't have your plate of food sitting next to you when you go through it because they know you're distracted. That's distracted driving.
You know, you mentioned earlier the cleanliness of the truck, the condition of the truck, meaning rusted out or busted up or something. That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It does. They talk about different forms of communication. There's verbal communication like you and I are doing, and then there's nonverbal communication, like your truck looks like junk. Mm-hmm. Sends yeah. a message to those who might be enforcing the rules that day.
It does.
Now, I mean, it's easy to make light of that, but the fact is I've had drivers describe negative experiences at the scale or in a roadside inspection where it's the type of fellow that he opened the door of the truck and pop cans fell out or the Arby's bag or the McDonald's leftovers, you know, and that's the impression that was made on that law enforcement professional.
Yeah.
Who we, you know, I don't know if you've ever been around those guys much. They run a pretty tight ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go into their car's clean. Their stuff's organized. They know where every piece of equipment is. And they kind of expect that from us, don't they?
Yeah.
And how hard is it to stay that way?
Well, when you live in the truck, it can be hard, but when you stop of a night, you know, I mean, just straighten your stuff up. I mean, you're living in a 6-square-foot space. It's not that hard to reach over and straighten something up. You know, carry a trash can. Don't throw it on the floor.
I agree with you that when you're living in a confined space like that, it's real easy to get it cluttered.
Yes.
When I asked the question about, well, how hard is that? What does it cost? It costs a few minutes.
Yeah.
When you stop, it costs just a little bit of effort here and there. Little pain, big gain, right? Because again, it does communicate something about the quality of your operation.
Yeah.
And I know we're spending a lot of time on that, but it really can't be overstated how valuable that is to you. Let's say it's a time where maybe you're not feeling 100%. You're feeling like you hope you don't get inspected. Showing up correct, you got much better odds in faring well through that than if you show up a mess.
Yeah.
I like it. Hey, in terms of, I don't know how many deliveries you've made or if you're keeping track of that number. I'm sure it's in the hundreds, if not the thousands, based on your years of experience. But would you liken the success at the delivery point to the success you've had roadside? Will you practice some of the same habits?
Yeah, trying to be nice to them. I mean, you're supposed to treat somebody how you want to be treated. You know, I know we all have bad days. But when you realize that, apologize to somebody. A lot of people don't know how to say, I'm sorry. You know, be nice to them. Treat them like you want to be treated.
As long as you've been doing this, you've probably been to the same place more than once.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's some advantages in that.
There is.
You show up kind of knowing their program and knowing their personnel.
Yeah, you do. Ashland, Virginia, I was one of the first ones that went to McGeorge's when Camping World acquired it. And they would, you got to park a distance from the store. They'd come get me on a golf cart, give me a ride.
Just because they knew it was you?
Because they knew who it was.
You know, I haven't driven for a long time, Jeremy, but I can relate to that. There were times where I showed up at the dealership, and for reasons unknown to me, they weren't very nice. And I knew I hadn't wronged them in any way, so at first I was not sure why I was getting that treatment, but it started to sink in after a while. Not every one of us is doing this with the same level of professionalism.
Yeah.
So what I learned in observing this occur was, say the three guys before me were not real cool. We're not professionals. They showed up demanding, short-tempered, whatever, in a hurry, not there to be helpful, not there with a service attitude. And they engendered some hostility.
Yeah.
From that staff. I show up with those things intact, but I'm being tarred with the wrong brush. They're like, oh, it's another one of these transporters. Great, you know, and their attitude isn't awesome. But in interacting with you, with me, guys who are in this to get it right, that is probably a refreshing experience to those personnel.
It's a lot on how you get out of your truck and look. I mean, if you get out of your truck and you look like a slob, you know, look professional. I wear shirts that's got Wave Express on it. When I worked where I worked at before, when I started doing this, I had a uniform. So I come up with my own uniform. Whatever day week you see me, you'll see me with these pants and this shirt and stuff on. I've got like 5 different sets of clothes. Don't get out of the truck with your flip-flops on and your Hawaiian shirt and your holy jeans and stuff like that and expect to look professional. And, you know, no matter how they treat you at these stores, and I've been treated all different ways, don't change not being nice to them just because they might be having a bad day, you know, because they might be different when you go back next time because they remember your face.
It's not that hard to stand out.
Yeah.
You show up with the right attitude, with professionalism. You're there to serve. You're there to learn their program and how they want it done. That is remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time they see you, you get a bit of a different experience, a bit of a different attitude. I've lived through that. I can 100% endorse that. And you just can't emphasize how valuable that is.
Yeah.
You show up, you've come with your, regardless of what you encounter,
mm-hmm.
you're there to get it right and act right and be right. And guess what? You show up time number two,
mm-hmm. they're usually
you're going to have a different experience.
Yeah. I've run across that.
In terms of, so you've been doing this since 2013. You've got millions of miles under your belt. Obviously, you've learned to interact with our operations team pretty successfully. What are some of your favorite lanes to run?
I've always liked Ashland, Virginia. And I've done that. I've done a lot of North Carolina and South Carolinas just because it's close to home. I live in Eastern Kentucky. Mm-hmm. But I really love going out west.
So we're about out west.
I like going out to I-80 corridor. I always, don't know why, but I always love going through Iowa and Nebraska.
Do you like going northeast?
I'll go northeast when I'm asked. There's good That's people fair. Up there. There's really good people up there. It's just tolls you know are extremely high.
No, I appreciate your straight talk, man. It's because the reason I asked the question, I was kind of doing it to set you up. That's not everybody's favorite place to go oftentimes, yeah. And dispatch struggles to get units delivered there. And the one thing that I recall, now I haven't been on the road in a while, okay, so I don't want to act like you're the one who's been doing this as of yesterday, not me. But as I recall, when we deliver into the Northeast, I'm not going to downtown Boston. I'm not going to Long Island. I'm going to retail districts on the outskirts of town, and that's a bit of a different experience. Yeah. Than, I mean, I've made deliveries to Manhattan in a big truck. I've made deliveries to downtown Boston, okay? So I do know what that's like, and that is not a whole lot of fun. This is not what we're doing in the Northeast.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to population centers, but we're usually in a retail zone, and we're usually on, you know, the highway and off briefly and then back on again.
Yeah.
Sound right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I remember it.
I mean, so you don't have to worry about pulling the trailer. Now, I've pulled trailers through D.C. and New York and stuff like that. But
I'm sorry.
Just, yeah. you just got to have patience. And do it at don't do it in the middle of rush hour. Find your truck stop and wait till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning.
What advice can you give people in terms of doing – so I understand you have preferences. You like the southeast, and those are some beautiful lanes to run, and you like going long west on the 80 corridor. When you are asked to do something that is not on the top of your favorites list and you do it anyway, is there any payback for that? You find you gain anything from doing that?
Oh, your dispatcher remembers you. I mean, you scratch their back, they're going to scratch yours. You know.
I've had guys tell me, you know, most of the time I do what I want, but when dispatch asks me to help them with something that's not as cool as what I like, man, you get in the habit of doing that once in a while, you got it made.
Yeah.
Is that still
it helps out.
In your
experience? Not everybody likes to pull part models, but I'll pull them. I don't care.
Bottom line is when you are that solution to your dispatch team, when you're looked upon as that asset, when there are opportunities that are a little sweeter, those tend to come your way.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Very much.
I mean, I know you've had some firsthand experience with some of those. And one of the things that we don't put on a billboard is some of the higher paying opportunities that come along. Some of the special projects. We've got dealers that have special needs sometimes, inventory relocation shows, et cetera. And those projects can be financially quite rewarding to the contractors. Now, I don't have those to offer every day. So we tend not to oversell it, right? We try to undersell and overdeliver. But when you've established yourself as the type of contractor who will be the solution when it's needed, even if it's not your favorite destination, you end up being called into those better opportunities. I guess that's the point I'm trying. Oh, and you've lived that a bunch of times. I know you have.
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm trying to get out there is your voice as somebody who's live on the road, live environment, doing this thing. I think you'd recommend that type of a program where, of course, you've got your preferences and you're going to try and do that if at all possible.
Yeah.
But when the need arises, respond to it, be the solution to your dispatch team, and find out just how much that benefits you down the road long term.
Mm-hmm. It does. I mean, when you're cooperative, they'll cooperate with you. They'll remember you.
Jeremy, you've been doing this long enough. Do you remember the first 30 days of your work?
Oh, yeah.
The reason I ask you that question is this. I remember mine, and it was it was not the best example of how to succeed in vehicle transport. But my first 30 days, I mean 0 to 30, compared to a 30-day window a year in to my work, unrecognizable side by side.
Oh, yeah.
That first 30 days, I was stumbling around, you know, making dumb mistakes, and it wasn't the most profitable thing I've ever done. 30 days a year later, I was smoking it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I had learned a whole bunch of things through stupid mistakes and otherwise, you know, learning from people like yourself, more experienced than I was. Picking up some of the best practices. Man, I mean, a year into the thing, I was no longer a rookie. I was now, you know, a sophomore.
Yeah.
I was year two, and I was making substantially more money than that first season.
Oh, yeah.
Is that been your experience as well?
Yes, it is.
I guess I'm asking you that because I want people who are either contemplating coming into this thing or they're new in this thing and struggling to understand that school of hard knocks is there for you too.
Mm-hmm.
And you work through it with the right attitude, with a sense of professionalism and commitment and determination, and you're going to get to that, let's just call it that sophomore year, where the money's a little different. in a very good way.
Yeah. Always be willing to learn.
Be willing to learn and also be willing to make more money.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's kind of the idea. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And every little lesson you get adds to that formula.
Yeah.
I know one of the first and most important lessons I learned, and we're going to wrap this up here shortly because we're getting that time, but one of the first and most important lessons I learned was do not flirt with a business closing deadline on a Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Because now you're stuck somewhere for a weekend you don't necessarily want to be, and there's no money in that.
Yeah.
Right? You don't even come close to that trap. Don't, if you can at all, if you could deliver on a Friday, deliver early and get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
Get back to your next paying gig.
That goes in with be better planner on your day.
Trip planning.
Yeah.
Takes a risk out of the formula, puts more money into it.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a pleasure speaking with you, Jeremy, and I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming in for the podcast. I hope we've reached some people who maybe had some questions or some concerns, and maybe we've addressed some of those. But thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Appreciate it. You too.